When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to the All Things Blues and Southern Rock Podcast, a southern storm of bold, liberating rock, shot through with blues, soul, and gospel. And now, your hosts for the show, Brian Jones and Jason Johannes.
Welcome to another episode of the All Things Blues and Southern Rock Podcast on Pantheon Podcast, where you can go to find your most preferred music podcast. It is also the home of the Metallica podcast, and we talk about that. Even though we are blues and Southern rock, we got to give that a shout out. With me is Jason, and what's going on, man?
Happy Black Friday.
Yeah.
How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm good. Yeah, I heard my wife was telling me, like, she saw, like, Black Friday wasn't, like, too crazy. I don't know, where she saw videos of something, like, nobody in the stores. Like,
Yeah. I think it, I don't know what it is this year. It doesn't, I maybe Thanksgiving is a week earlier than it normally is. And it's, you know, another week out from Christmas. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. It just doesn't seem like it's insane. My wife and my daughter always go out every year early in the morning with friends just to go, just to be part of it. And they said there was not even that many good deals or anything out there. So,
I can totally believe that. Yeah.
But it is also record store day today, Brian.
Is it record store day? There we go. Like, I should know that, but I didn't. Is it always the Friday after Thanksgiving?
It is always the Friday after Thanksgiving. And 2 years ago, I got the Blackberry Smoke Stoned record.
Yeah,
this year there was one record I was really looking forward to, and I was able to get it. It's Rilo Kiley's Under the Black Light, their last album before they disbanded. Sounds fantastic on vinyl.
What else do you know? Like, what else came out?
There was a Faces Live recording session album that came out. Eric Carr of Kiss, you know, a record from him. Matt Cameron had a solo record. He drummed for Pearl Jam and Candlebox. And today, a Kix album, the very first Kix album reissue came out as well, Brian.
Oh, cool. That's awesome. That's totally
isn't
awesome.
That kind of coincidental?
It is coincidental because our guest is Brian Forsyth from Kix, formerly of Kix, now Rhino Bucket, and someone we wanted to get for a long time. And it would, just like other guests before him, Frank Cannon, you know, Damon Johnson, you know, going back to people that were my soundtracks in my earlier part of my life. Brian was great to talk to about his other projects that you will hear all about.
Yeah, and he's a Telecaster extraordinaire player. Like, he's a master of the Telecaster, and you know, that's I love Telecasters.
Yeah, man, he rocks it big time.
Where do you come in with Kix, Brian? I know this is, like, so the soundtrack of you. We talked to Jamie St. James of Black and Blue. I know you've always been a Kix fan.
Yeah, well, Black and Blue, that was you know, I was 14, 15 when I started coming across them and listen to them. Kix, about 88, 89, around there. And of course, they're one of our bands that, you know, got unnecessarily grouped in with what gets called hair metal. more on the rock and roll side of things. You know, they got the kind of Angus Young and Keith Richards riffs. I always blow my fuse and always think of that and Cinderella Gypsy Road as these, you know, quintessential, what I call Keith or Angus riffs.
Yeah, for sure. You know, and I was not initially into Kix. I know you liked them right away. My first foray into Kix was my freshman year of high school. My sister was a senior. She was dating a guy, I think was a junior. Anyway, she took the three of us to a mall. He bought the cassette single. Remember the singles I used to call them?
Yeah.
Of Don't Close Your Eyes. Remember that was their big hit song, mm-hmm. Kix. Yeah. And the mall was maybe 35 plus minutes away. And on the way home, he just played that song over and over. And I'm like, I don't think I like Kix because I can't, all I hear is the song. But later on, I did get into them, like Blow My Fuse. Like Cold Blood is such a good song. Like there's a great catalog. And like you said, Brian incorporates some of those Stonesian riffs into his Telecaster playing.
Did he have like an auto reverse cassette player in his car?
I think, I don't remember if you could either flip it over and it played the same song or if there was a B-side or if he just kept rewinding it and playing. And my sister's blue Chevrolet Chevette. Remember those things? Remember the Chevettes with the little hatchbacks?
Yeah. Yeah, that's like sometimes when you like forget about cars like that, and it gets in your head, somebody mentions it, and then you'll see one.
Yeah.
See a car like,
yeah,
like I saw a Volkswagen Rabbit a while back.
Oh, my God.
Like, somebody actually took care of
it. Was it convertible?
No.
No, it wasn't convertible. I remember the Volkswagen Rabbit convertibles were a little bit of a thing for a lot of girls back in the late 80s, early 90s.
Now we're an 80s automotive, popular automotive podcast.
That's right. That's right. It's nostalgia. We're talking to Brian Damageforth from Kix, so it's a little nostalgic.
Yeah, and, you know, we all know about Kix, but he's going to talk about a whole lot of other stuff. So you guys kick back and relax and listen to our conversation with Brian Forsyth. We're here at the guest segment of the podcast, and we got a guy that we've wanted to have on here for a long time. And Jason is going to introduce our guest that we've already told you about, but here's the introduction.
I always love that. We've already told you about, but here's the surprise guest. No, it's our pleasure to have on a guy that we've loved a lot of stuff that he's done. We're going to talk a lot about all the various things he's done, but you may know him from Kix, but we've got Brian Damage Forsyth with us. How you doing, Brian?
Good.
How's everything? And you're in Nashville, right?
Yeah.
We hear all about the funky rock and roll neighborhoods, like either people used to live right next to each other or do now. We've had like Tony Higbee and Damon Johnson and Tyler Bryant, Ace Von Johnson. We hear about these neighborhoods like, yeah, that guy's my neighbor. He lives down the street.
Tony Higbee, I watch his cats. Well, I used to watch his cats when he was out of town. He lived I can ride my bike to his house.
There's this network of support for animals, because last year when we talked to Ace around Halloween, he was watching Tony's cats. I know Tony watches dogs. Brian, it sounds like everybody's in on the action, pet sitting.
Yeah. I actually hire a professional, but
so what you're saying is you don't trust Tony or Ace. Hell no.
Well, no, actually, Tony did it for me one time when I was in the finish.
So how are you doing? You recently had like a carbon monoxide kind of scare or you what happened there?
Oh, that was the end of last May. You know, and if you know anything about carbon monoxide, it's like odorless. I mean, I had no clue what was going on, and it had been going on for a while. I had a new water heater put in, one of those tankless water heaters, and apparently it had been leaking the whole time. And the stupid thing is I have a carbon monoxide detector right by where it is. It's inside my garage, and above the garage door, I have the detector. And soon after they installed that brand new heater, the detector started going off, and I thought it was the detector that was defective. So I took it down and stuck it in a drawer because it kept making noise. It kept going off. And that was about a year ago.
It was doing its job.
Yeah. And I just thought something was wrong. I changed the battery, and I turned I have a ceiling fan in the garage, and I turned that on, and I just got annoyed with the detector. So I took it down. So then a year later, in fact, my garage is also my workout area, where every morning I'm working out and I'm breathing heavy and stuff. And it's right there. And on the other side of the door that goes into the house is my room where all my guitars are. And that's where I go over this set list and stuff. So I spend most of my time there. And what happened was, my girlfriend was out of town, and I woke up one morning and it just felt like I couldn't wake up. I couldn't shake that groggy feeling, and I was dizzy, but I was by myself. So I just, kind of dismissed it and went about my day. And I was driving around and going to places, picking up, going to the post office, and I had to meet the duck lady, the lady I get my duck eggs from. And she was the first human contact I had that day. And I remember I couldn't talk. I was stumbling over my words. I'm getting my own story wrong. I did a podcast the night before that. She was actually, that was the first person I was face to face with, but I did a podcast the night before, and the guy that I did the podcast with, I was having trouble putting sentences together. He called me the next morning and suggested that it might be something like carbon monoxide. And that caused me to go down and get that thing out of the detector out of the drawer and put it back up. And it didn't go off at first, but my girlfriend in the meantime came home. Well, she convinced me to go to an urgent care. They thought I had vertigo. Was just like nobody knew what was going on. So when she came home and saw me, and she, I guess, I don't know if my mouth was drooping or not, but I couldn't play guitar. I was getting ready to go to Maryland to play a kick show. And I picked up my guitar to go over the set, and I couldn't, I just felt like I'd forgotten how to play. And she told me to go to the emergency room. So she took me there. It was a Friday, and they took me in. And even at that point, I didn't know it was carbon monoxide. I just said, I was trying to figure it out in my brain. I had a tick bite that I had gotten about a month prior. I thought, well, maybe it's a tick bite. And then I thought, well, maybe, I was thinking all these things. And they took me back and they did an MRI, and they discovered, I had a stroke. And the fact that they didn't deduce that it was carbon monoxide at first. So by the time they did a carbon monoxide test on my blood, it was gone. And so there is, it's kind of an you know, they don't believe me, or at least they I don't know. It's just weird. There's no conclusion, but there's no reason why this would have happened. I mean, I'm perfectly healthy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And
all the symptoms sound just like that, man. Carbon monoxide exposure.
Yeah. Well, and another crazy thing is, I guess I've been at the place. I was at the hospital over. Well, actually, I was there for a couple of days before I woke up one morning. Like, well, they wake me up. They would wake me up to give me all these like pills and stuff. But I checked my security camera in the garage, and I heard the alarm going off. And my girlfriend was here, and I called her because you know, she's up here in the bedroom, and I said, hey, or actually I couldn't get a hold of her. It just rang and rang. I got her voicemail. And I told her that from 4 o'clock on, that alarm has been going off. So she finally got my message and she called the fire department. And they discovered that it was coming from the water heater. And also the bedroom was a high concentration area. And a couple weeks before my stroke, my cat was going through seizures. And that explained that, because we couldn't figure out why she was having seizures. So it was just crazy. And the plumbers came to look at the water heater, and they fixed the exhaust, but that wasn't the problem, because the thing went off again that night. And it turned out that it had an internal defect. Something about, I don't know, the heat exchange or something was leaking, or it was cracked or something. So they put in a new one. So now I don't have that problem.
Yeah. Man, you are lucky. There's a lot of people who've actually died from carbon monoxide exposure. Like Vitus Skirlaitis, the tennis great, USC, died years ago. His parents' house, they had a space heater. Like it's like you said, it's tasteless, odorless, and it just overcomes you, and you like kind of go to sleep and don't wake up.
Yeah, you don't even smell exhaust or anything.
Yeah. That's scary. I just had a water heater put in a couple months ago, a new one. It's not tankless, but like I do have a carbon monoxide down there, thankfully. So kids, make sure you have a carbon monoxide detector.
Yeah, don't take it off. Put it on the
floor. When it's beeping, it means it's working.
Yeah.
Hello, Pantheon podcast listeners. Christian Swain here to tell you more about my experience with Raycon earbuds. Our family now has 3 pairs of Raycon earbuds around the house. And my wife just grabbed a pair of the Headphone Pros to replace some headphones from a company that was double the price. And yes, she loves them. Now, if you haven't pulled the trigger on a pair of Raycons, or even if you have, but you're in the market for another pair because they're just that good, well, now is the time to check them out, because they just launched their upgraded model of the best-selling everyday earbuds. With Raycon's upgraded everyday earbuds, now you also get active noise cancellation, ergonomic design, and multi-point connectivity that lets you pair with 2 devices at once, new quick charge function, 3 customizable sound styles plus awareness mode, available in a variety of vibrant new colors to complement any and all skin tones. I even have a pair of earbuds in a cool green color. I have tried just about every earbud known to humankind, and these Raycons are fantastic. Seriously, if you've been wanting to check out Raycons, there truly is no better time. You're going to ask yourself why you didn't check them out sooner, and Raycon offers a 30-day happiness guarantee. So what are you waiting for? Go to buyraycon.com/pantheon today to get 20% off your Raycon order, plus free shipping. That's right, you'll get 20% off and free shipping at buyraycon.com/pantheon. buyraycon.com/pantheon.
Well, we're glad you're okay, man. I just wanted to ask you how you're doing and everything seems back to normal.
Well, yeah. I mean, I spent a week in a rehab. You know, my balance finally came back, and pretty much physically I mean, I have a little bit of weakness here and there, but the only thing that didn't come back is my guitar playing. I mean, most of it did, but the little nuances are, I just can't pull off like I used to. So I'm still working on that.
Well, you get it back, man, you know.
Yeah.
So
keep at it.
Is it kind of hard to put into words, you know, like with Kix is done, is when we say bittersweet, or how do you feel about it?
I remember when Steve, he decided he didn't want to do it anymore, and he set the date. Well, Jimmy set the date, and Steve went along with it. Because at first, Steve was going to continue on throughout the rest of the year. But when he first brought it up, we had a band Zoom meeting, and I was trying to talk him out of it. I didn't want it to end, at least this year. And then, you know, we finally decided on a final show, because we didn't have that when we decided. It was just going to sort of, he wanted to just slowly fade away and walk away from it. He didn't want to make a big deal out of it. And we had convinced him to at least, let's do one last big show. And I'm glad we did that, because, you know, our fans deserved it. And, you know, I've accepted, you know, I accepted it by the time we got to that show that we weren't, you know, that it was ending. But these last few years, you know, with the pandemic and everything, it sort of conditioned me for long periods of not doing anything. And so that's what this feels like now. Maybe it hasn't sunk in or something, but, you know, I just a long time between gigs.
Well, I got to see you guys twice, and I feel really grateful for that. I mean, you guys are just a great, great, great rock and roll band that, you know, kind of at one point got thrown into the whole kind of, you know, LA kind of metal kind of thing. And, you know, when Patrick's been on from Junkyard, we talked to him about it too. And, you know, we always talk, when talking to Charlie, talking about Tesla and Cinderella and, you know, LA Guns and, you know, these bands that are more rock and roll bands that got thrown into that, you know, whatever hair metal kind of thing. So, but when I watch, you know, just videos and stuff, I'm like, wow, just so incredible. So I'm definitely glad I got to see you guys. So I gotta ask the first question we asked Charlie yesterday. I gotta ask you too. I'm gonna assume that you've heard it, but have you heard? Do you have your little review of Hackney Diamonds, the Stones, yet, or have you heard it? Or
I actually bought the physical album, but I downloaded the stream or the MP3s. What I think of it, it's not bad for a new album, but you know, it doesn't sound like the old Stones. But my favorite era of Stones is probably around between 69 and 73.
Yeah.
Four.
Yeah. That run from Beggar's Banquet to Goat's Head Soup, pretty much.
Yeah.
That's probably my favorite run too, Brian. Like I love the more bluesy Americana stuff for sure.
Yeah. I thought when I remember growing up, I wasn't really a Stones fan. I listened to the Beatles, and I had an older brother that had all the Beatles records, and he had a couple Stones records, and it was like the ones with Brian Jones. I don't know. I didn't like it. It didn't sound like the Beatles. And then when they finally got to Beggar's Banquet, my brother brought that record home, and that was the first Stones record. It was like, wow, this is, I really like this. And I think that they finally found where they were supposed to be when they got to that point.
Very cool. Very cool. So it was interesting to, when I've read about, you know, your career and whatnot, like one thing I found out that I hadn't known before is that you went down to Alabama early on in your career, and how did that come about? Or were you like more in tune with Southern rock at that point, or what, how would it all go? How did that work for you, and how did everything go down there? What was the goal and what happened?
Well, actually I'm I'm a big Southern rock fan, and that's mm-hmm. that's pretty much where I learned how to play guitar from mm-hmm. Dickie Betts and Billy Gibbons, and I mean those were my yeah. guitar heroes. And around 1975, I dropped out of high school. Like I was supposed to graduate in 75, and school was useless to me. It was like, by the time I got to my senior year, it was all makeup courses of every class that I'd failed. And there's a reason I failed. So there's no use to go back. So my parents let me drop out. And they said, you you don't have to go back, but you have to get a full-time job. So I started working, and I was working at this, it was at a big shopping center. There was a pizza place. And I got a full-time job making pizzas and a short order to cook and stuff like that. And it was weird. They changed managements, and the whole staff rebelled, and they walked out on Friday night. And I'm the daytime guy. So I get this phone call, this panic call from the new management. And they call me in to try to fill in. And for the next 2 weeks, I had to train all the new people. So at the end of the 2 weeks, they inform me that they're letting me go because they want to start fresh. And I thought, oh man, like what a bummer. But I've got this weird outlook on the way things are. I figure, you know, there's a reason for this, and I didn't take it out on them. I had visions of taking the trash out and just I did my job. I got my paycheck, my final paycheck, and I walked out and got in my, I had a little Chevy Love truck, and I got in it, turn the key, and it goes, it was dead.
Oh no.
I'm sitting there with a final check in my hand, just got fired. My truck won't start. And I'm sitting in the parking lot, and the parking lot's a little bit of a downgrade. So it's a 5-speed. So I stick my foot out the door and I give it a little push. I drift down and I pop the clutch. And it doesn't start. It just sort of drifts and comes to a stop at the curb. And just then, this guy that I knew, he was about 4 years older than me, and he was a real, really good bass player. Like he played in a few bands around the area that I knew. He was coming out of the shopping center, and he saw me, and he goes, "You need some help?" And I said, "Yeah, I need a jump start." And it was just the right time, the right, you know, the timing was perfect. So we started talking, and he was in between bands, and I wasn't in a band at the time. And I ended up in a band with him, and he ended up in my parents' basement at first. It was me and him and a drummer, just a 3-piece. We put a whole set list of songs together, and he had gone to college down in Alabama. That's why we ended up going there. He was his father was a veteran. So as long as he goes to the college, he gets paid for it. And so we decided to take our band down there, and we rented a band house in Florence, Alabama, which is right across the river from Muscle Shoals. Mm-hmm. So it's right down there in the mid-70s and right by Muscle Shoals. And there was like, I mean, it was similar to Nashville. Like everybody played guitar, and everyone was a songwriter. And so it was just a cool learning experience for me. We got another guitar player, and then we got a keyboard player, and we're playing all around like Alabama, Tennessee, Georgia. And then at one point we hooked up with this country singer guy who had, it was funny because he only had a single. He had 145, but I guess we filled it in with cover songs or something. Well, we did a whole tour with him. So anyway, long story short, it was about 8 months I spent down there, but playing like nonstop. And we played everything from, I mean, our set list was everything from Freddie Fender to Aerosmith and everything in between. Okay. We did Casey and the Sunshine Band. We did the Eagles. I mean, everything you can think of, and a bunch of Skinners, of course. But yeah, so by the time I came back from there, I mean, I'd already been playing for a few years, but that really taught me how to play and how to, all the different styles. And it was just so cool to be down there, you know, near Muscle Shoals. What most people talk about is, you know, the Stones did Sticky Fingers there. Mm-hmm. And that wasn't too far after that. But while I was down there, we tried out for our band, auditioned for Hank Williams Jr. He came to this club where we were playing, and because he was looking for a backup band and he wanted to get more into country rock at that time. But needless to say, we didn't pass the audition.
No. That's really cool though. Like,
yeah, that's awesome.
I mean, yeah, especially as young guys, young man, have that guy come in there like a legend.
Yeah, and the night he was there, everyone knew he was coming there or something. All the Muscle Shoals musicians were there, the studio guys. I got to meet all those famous guys that played on all those records. So that was a cool experience.
What was the name of that band?
It was called Trace.
You missed a perfect opportunity. It should have been called Jumpstart.
Yeah, it should have.
I mean, it's kind of a cool name for a band too, you know?
Yeah.
So we'll fast forward, and I know like after when Kick Split, the first time the grunge thing happens and you end up out in LA, and at some point you hook up with Patrick and you start the Rhythm Kings, and that goes into Catfish.
Well, it was right at the end of Kicks. It was after Hotwire. It was, I guess, the end of 92. I started taking trips out to LA. We'd have like a few days off here and there. And I had all these frequent flyer miles from going to Japan twice. So I'd use them to go to LA. And well, prior to that, I was starting to write some songs, and they weren't really Kick songs. And so I was looking for somebody to write songs with. And I reached out to my guitar tech, my ex-guitar tech, who's on the road with Faster Pussycat. And yeah, it's funny you're wearing that. Because I initially called to get a hold of Tammy. And it just so happened that what's his name? Eric Stacy was in the room with my guitar tech. And he ended up getting the phone and talking to me, and he convinced me to write some songs with him. So I never got to talk to Tammy about it, but Eric ended up coming up to my house, and we wrote a bunch of songs. And then that's when I started going out to LA, and we got together with Pat and this other really good guitar player, this French guy named Francois. I don't even know what happened to him, but, yeah, so we put this thing together, and we had the singer is, well, his real name's Adam White, but he went by Rail. I don't know why. Well, he supposedly Axel had nicknamed him, so he called himself Rail. But we did a demo and four or five songs. And when I heard the end result, I said, oh, wow, this is what I want to do. because I was starting to get disillusioned with Kix, and you know, the grunge thing was starting to come around, and I just felt like this ship was sinking, and I couldn't handle going back down the same way we came up. And I came back to Maryland, and I told those guys that I was leaving. And I remember it was in March of 93 when I finally left. And the week I left, they released a Kix Live album, and that's my guitar on the front of it. But
I've heard the you know, Rhythm King's Catfish stuff. It's fantastic. I mean, it's almost like Shake Your Money era Black Crowes. It's really good. It's really good.
Actually, it's called the Rhythm Slaves.
Oh, the Rhythm Slaves. I'm sorry. Yeah. The Rhythm Slaves, right. And then Catfish. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It was cool. And we had Howard Tiemann playing keyboards. So it was, he's really good at that honky tonk stuff.
Did you know Patrick ahead of time before you got in that band with him?
Not really. No, I'd seen Junkyard play. In fact, I saw them at Hammerjacks. At one point, they were the headliner, and Black Crowes was opening for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, early on, right when the Crowes were getting started, Yeah.
We talked to Patrick all about that tour and all that.
He told us some stories and some things they taught the Crowes a little bit about being on the road, yeah.
Yeah, and the fact that show was the night after they were on David Letterman. And I remember Chris Robinson was like, oh, did you see us on there? And like I told him I watched it. And I mean, they were just on the verge. They hadn't spoken yet.
Well, when a band like that comes out and starts to gain popularity, you know, you're talking about you're going back to do some like, kind of more traditional rock with blues. Does that give you a little hope or a little inspiration at the same time? It's like, yeah, this is a good choice kind of for us to go this route.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I just felt because that's more of my natural feel on guitar and stuff. And that's what I'm good at. I saw that in the Black Crowes. It's like, they're just doing what they do and they don't care what's going on around them. Mm-hmm. And cause I remember, you know, back in the '80s, when we were touring, our area representative for, you know, the label would come and he'd always have promo CDs. And I remember digging through this box of CDs and seeing the Black Crowes CD. So I grabbed it. I grabbed that in a, what was it? It was, I remember I got the first Rhino Bucket record like that. Mm-hmm. And James Brown, that one he did, he came in his comeback album, Living in the USA or something. I don't know, I forget. But anyway, so I took those three CDs and I remember putting the Black Crowes on it and just being blown away by it. And it's just so inspirational to hear.
Yeah, it was a weird, like, so the time and music, what was going on was weird because you sort of still had the LA metal kind of pop scene going on. You had the emergence of grunge and then you have this band that's a throwback. And of course, you know, those guys got out there and all of a sudden you had, you know, Brother Kane and Cry of Love and stuff kind of in that same vein, hit a kind of a couple year spot with some popularity in between the, you know, the metal and the alternative or the grunge scene.
Yeah. Yeah, it was refreshing.
Yeah. Well, and your style on guitar too, because Brian always talks about Kix in a lot of these podcasts, is we always dug the bands, even before we started doing this podcast, who had more of a blues, he had more of a Southern rock element to him, like you guys, Junkyard, Cinderella, Great White, you know, that's kind of the things that we were certainly drawn to. And to hear you say, you know, hey, I went down in Alabama and I was playing these cover songs and doing this and learning those flicks and hearing what your music, you know, your riffs with Kix and stuff, even Rhino Bucket, it makes a lot of sense. Like you can tell that's your kind of your sweet spot.
Yeah. I came along before all that wheely deedly finger tap.
I like the bluesier stuff myself because I can't do all the crazy stuff anyway. So I could do a couple blues flicks. So I dig it too.
Yeah.
So you've been in the music business when it was big, huge record companies and all that, and then the transition of the streaming and all that. Like, so with Rhythm Kings, turns or Rhythm Slaves, I'm sorry.
Is there like a Rhythm
Yeah,
King or something?
it's
There's something
like
that's a
I gotta
Rhythm King somewhere. I know.
I know, yeah. The Rhythm Slaves turns into Catfish, and back then was it were bands dependent upon having to sell millions of copies to be able to continue to tour and record? Because now it's all about the playing live and the merch and all that. So was there did that lead into why you guys didn't keep doing the Catfish thing, or?
Well, we never even got as far as a record deal, really. And the reason we the Rhythm Slaves turned into Catfish, it was basically the same band, but we got a new bass player. We replaced Eric Stacey because yeah, there's a little bit of drug problems there. But yeah, we recorded the first demo, and then we went back as Catfish and recorded a bunch more songs, about five more songs, which we were going to shop around. And that's about the time Kix offered me, they offered to pay me to come back and do the show business record. So, which was it was funny because I was paid as an outside musician, and that was like I got paid more than the guys in the band for doing that. And so I went back to record, and while I was back in Maryland, my singer called me one day and told me he was leaving the band, the Catfish, because he thought for some reason he thought for sure I was going to go back and record and go back to Kix. So he just bailed on the whole thing, and then that band fell apart.
So what it transpires at that point, how soon until you guys like got back to doing Kix full time or as
Oh,
much as you could?
that didn't happen until the end of 2003.
Okay.
But I mean, in between that, in between Catfish and the other thing, all kinds of stuff was going on. I mean, I was playing in a blues band called the Purple Gang, and that's where I met Reed from Rhino Bucket because he was the bass player for the Purple Gang, and then from there. Him and I joined this other band with a singer. This band, it was called Trouble Walking. It was like a southern rock, and eventually we got back to that. But it was the same singer from that eventually was in the Snake Handlers. But this was getting close to the end of the 90s. I hooked up with. These are all bands that were happening at the same time. I hooked up with Joe Lestay with a band called The Vagabonds, and we did it every Wednesday night at the Teaser. And then George came into the picture. And he, me and Reeve and George and another drummer got together, and it wasn't Rhino Bucket yet. It was called Deep Six Holiday. So I was with them, doing shows with them and recording demos. I had all these things going on. I don't know how I juggled all that stuff, because at the same time, I was steadily going downhill, like with drugs and drinking, and by the end of the 90s, like 98, it all came to an end. I got arrested and I spent time in jail, and I had a moment of clarity. It was weird, walking. Walk, I'd been I'd gone through a strip search. Like a bunch of guys came. We got bussed up to this the jail up. I started out in LA County, down in LA, and they bussed us up to this other jail out of town. Up near Magic Mountain, and we had to go through another strip search when we got off the bus, and it was just this humiliating thing. And I remember after they they throw your clothes back at you and tell you to get dressed. And after you were down there spreading your butt cheeks. And so I put my clothes back on, just feeling horrible. And I'm walking in this line. We're headed up towards the dorm. And all of a sudden I get this moment and I go, I pictured myself in, on stage being this rock star. And then here I am in jail. And I thought, how'd this happen? And right. Yeah, it's crazy. And luckily I got hooked up with, now it's now Music Cares. Back then it was called Musicians Assistance Program. And my girlfriend got a hold of them, and they sent this lawyer to meet with me, and he arranged it so if I agreed to go to rehab, they'd let me out of jail. So I did, and I went to rehab and spent 2 months there, and then 12 months in a recovery home, and all this crazy stuff. But it worked. I mean, I got sober, and I've been sober ever since. But then I come out of rehab. In fact, I was maybe just my last month there, I get this phone call from George from Rhino Bucket, and he got an offer from Ricky Rackman. Ricky Rackman was trying to resurrect the Cat House, and he asked us to play. And George says, would you want to do the Rhino Bucket gig? Because the original guy, Greg, didn't want to do it. So I said, yeah. So I learned a bunch, all the songs, and did the gig with them. And then we started working on new songs. And it was like, before I knew it, I was in Rhino Bucket. It was weird. It's like getting into a relationship where you're just sort of dating, but then all of a sudden,
she's living at your house.
Yeah.
How was that for you, coming out of rehab and all that? And then were you ever concerned stepping back into the whole rock and roll spectrum, or did you know you were good to go with being sober and nothing was gonna?
Yeah, I felt all right about that. I the only hesitation I had was with Rhino Bucket. I didn't know if I wanted to do the hard rock thing again, but once I got there, once I learned the songs and stuff, I realized it's different than Kicks. It's more straightforward, and there's just something. Mm-hmm. It fits me better than Kicks.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's so good, influence, seemingly like, Bon Scott era AC/DC, that kind of sound. So it's just like totally cool. Are you still in Rhino Bucket whenever they go out to do gigs? And yeah. Okay, cool.
Yeah, I've been talking back and forth with George. We're planning on doing another record at some point.
Okay.
But yeah, so that's still going. It was funny because in the early 2000s when that happened, up until Kix got back together, that we had a lot more gigs going on and I could put a lot more time into it. And then once Kix started up, I sort of had to put that on the back burner, and Kix was the priority because, Kix makes more money.
Right. You got to do what you got to do as a musician, but yeah, that's good choice. So
they're still hanging around waiting for me, but now that I don't have Kix anymore, we can make some plans.
Now, I must be really good for you to know that you've got that. You got something else that you're going to be playing all the time and there for you, after the retirement of Kix. Yeah, it's cool. So at what point did you moved from Los Angeles to Nashville? What brought that about?
Well, I was in LA for 26 years. And right out of rehab, I had to get a job. I was working at a pet clinic. Going back to the Rhythm Slaves and Catfish days, it was so funny because Pat knew this girl that ended up being my girlfriend for 25 years. This girl, Janice Garza, she used to write for Rip magazine. He had her come to one of our rehearsals and to write a bio on the band. And she interviewed each one of us, and I ended up dating her and then moving in with her. And then 25 years later, she kicked me out. And I had to find my own.
That's longer than most marriages, man.
Yeah, I know. I know. But we're still friends though. Yeah. So that happened there. And she's the one that put me through got me into the rehab and all that. I worked at that pet clinic for 12 years until I couldn't, because it was just in and out of town so much that, and some of it was Rhino Bucket, because we were doing once a year, we were going to Europe for anywhere from 4 to 8 weeks during January and February. And the one time we went, it was 8 weeks. So I had to take that time off work. And while we were over there, we got booked at Sweden Rock, which is in June. So as soon as I got back to work, I had to ask for June off, because we couldn't just go over for one gig. We had to do all these gigs around it. And I remember they're really nice about it. They tried to work it out. I took a leave of absence, and I just had no more time, vacation time or sick time or anything. And they said the only way they could do it is if I resigned. So they sort of kept me on for, I don't know, I stayed for about a year. I was like a relief person. Like, they call me when somebody else was sick or on vacation. I don't know where I was going with that.
Moving to Nashville.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, Kix was full time after that. And at the end of the 25 year relationship, we, it was kind of mutual. It just, we were just sort of there together. And she said, she just decided she didn't want to do it anymore. And I had to leave. And I remember looking around for a place to live, and rent was more than a mortgage out there. And so I didn't want to do that. And in fact, I realized, I thought I was helping her with a mortgage for this nice house. And basically I was paying rent all that time. And so I had nothing to show for it at the end of that time. And I didn't want to keep continuing paying rent somewhere else. I wanted to buy a house, my own house. And there was, it just, everything was so expensive out there. Mm-hmm. The only thing I could afford was something I didn't want. Mm-hmm. I remember seeing this little shack in an alley. It wasn't even on the street. It didn't have a yard, and it was crooked. It was stuck up, bars on the windows, and they wanted, but at that time they wanted $300,000 for that. And it was basically, it looked like a garage that someone converted into a house. And I found for the exact same price here in Nashville, I got a 3-bedroom house, with a 2-car garage and half an acre of land for the same thing I could have gotten that little shack for. So when I decided to come here, it's either here or back to Maryland. And I thought about it. I mean, Kix was in Maryland, but nothing else was. And I don't know. I just saw this musically, it was really happening. I knew a lot of people that had moved here, and they were telling me how great it was and how cheap it was. And so I just did it. I just came out here at the beginning of January, 2019. I spent a week, and I kind of looked ahead of time online to what it was available. And I came here. I had a list of places to check out, and I just drove around for a week and looked at different areas and hooked up with a realtor. And by the end of that week, I decided on I found the house. And I mean, it all happened so quick. I just jumped into it and got it. And yeah, so then I moved here in March of 2019.
Just in time for the pandemic.
Yeah. No, yeah, I just got comfortable. I was just like exploring, going out, finding the cool little spots to watch a band. Yeah, and then everything shuts down. but it gave me a chance to enjoy my house, you know, and hang out with my cat and yeah.
Break in your home, you know, make it what you want it to be.
Yeah.
Well, when we had Damon Johnson on the first time, he just said, he goes, Nashville has everything you need, like as a musician, you know, it's just got everything you need.
Yeah. It's not just country. It's everything. And, you know, studios and rehearsals. I mean, it's
you got an airport that goes everywhere. You got highways that get that land. And like, you're in a good spot.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's not too cold in the winter. And
that's right.
It's hot in the summer, but I can take it.
Although a couple years ago, I was in Nashville. I think it was either March or April. And it was like 70 degrees during the day. And that night, a snowstorm came in and snowed like a couple inches and completely shut everything down like the next day. I was like, what the hell is this?
Yeah, there was one big storm I remember. In fact, my driveway is kind of comes downhill around back. And that's where my garage is. And for a week, I couldn't get my car up the driveway. I was stuck here.
I was very disappointed by that. But all my other trips to Nashville have been very nice, though.
Yeah.
It just always kind of sounds like there's always like a jam session going on somewhere, if you want, you know.
Yeah, yeah. In fact, I discovered this little place called D's Country Cocktail Lounge, and it's in Madison, which is 10 minutes from here, and it's on a little side street, and it's got a gravel parking lot, and you go in there and it's just a, you know, stage in the corner about this high off the floor, and a pool table and a jukebox and a couple tables, and there's always a great band playing, and it's just, and all the, like when you go see a band, there's always a tip jar up in front of the stage. I mean, that's how they get paid. Mm-hmm. And I used to go every Tuesday night before the pandemic and watch the Kenny Vaughn Trio. Kenny Vaughn's, he plays with Marty Stewart, but he had this three-piece trio, and they used to play there every Tuesday night for free. You know, and they go on early, 8 o'clock, because like most of the time, Kenny would have a gig afterwards, so he'd pack up and just run out the door. But that I found that, and then now there's this place, this new place called the East Side Bowl
that's not too far from here. Been there.
They got a big room in the back, but my favorite place is the little lounge. So
yeah, I ran into, so we were there for, there's a national like rock and pod, and it was in the spring this past year. I went there, and there was like an event, like Rare Hair was going on that night in the big room. Yeah,
that's,
you know, Ace Von Johnson, Leilani Kilgore, all these people that Brian and I know from the podcast, so we're going to see them play. And then I come out, and like Oddly Freed, was one of my favorite guitar players of all time, is just there in that little lounge playing with Nick Gorvick and some random drummer. I was like, oh my god, like one of my guitar heroes is like 5 feet from me, and I'm just standing here in like this little, you know, just a little lounge, like, you know, off the bowling alley.
Yeah, I know. That's a cool thing. In fact, when I first went to D's, I met Audley there, him and Robert, the bass player,
Robert Kearns.
Yeah. Yeah. Those guys were there. Who else? There were several people, but it was so cool. This little tiny bar, and all these guys were there, and I mean, it's like that. You go to different places, And like one time I was at the airport and my girlfriend's, and this is during the pandemic, so people had masks on. And she goes, "That guy over there looks like Billy Gibbons because he had this beard sticking out of his mask." And I go, and I look and I go, "That is Billy Gibbons." And he's just standing there with a cup of coffee and his, with his, some girl. But yeah, you just go to clubs down like everywhere. You just see celebrities. And oh, and another place, this barbecue place not far from here, we were there just one afternoon in the back room of this barbecue place. And there's these guys at the next table. And obviously they're like musicians or something, or studio guy. They're talking shop about studio gear or something. And then all of a sudden this guy and his wife walk in, and then I see him from behind and I go, "That looks like, what's his name? Ah, no, don't, my mind's going to go blank. James Burton." I say, that looks like James Burton. And he turns around, sure enough. And he says that he's like right at the next table. I mean, it's just crazy.
It is. Do you have a good recommendation? Like if like Brian and I are coming from out of town, like a place to go to really see musicians play and not that, you know, touristy crap.
Yeah. Well, there's a bunch of places I see where people play that I haven't gone to yet, so I can't remember the names. but people will post like this guy Guthrie Trapp. Mm-hmm. He's he plays a couple different styles, but he's a country guy. And I first discovered him. I went to this Billy Gibbons tribute at the Opry. And he came out on stage with Billy and played, and I was blown away. But he's always posting, like there's these different blues clubs or country clubs, and they're not those ones down there in the trendy area.
Yeah.
And I've gone to, I did go to one club down there in Printer's Alley one night, and saw Derek St. Holmes' band play.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
And that was cool.
Right on. So recently, I was sending Jason stuff that you've done, played on, and we saw the Saturday Night Special cover with John Corabi. And was that like one of those pandemic jams?
Yeah.
And if, like, how does that work? I mean, like, are you hearing everybody when you're playing that? Or are you... does that get mixed later on? And obviously the video gets edited, you know.
Yeah.
What's that like? How's that work? I always wondered about that.
Well, usually, how does it work? they'll send me the basic tracks, like the drummer and, you know, whoever, the bass player and stuff. They'll put down some tracks first and then send them. And I just do a track. I just play along with it on a separate track and somebody, then they mix it at the end. But I did that song, and one song that never made it to anything was, what was it? It was a Johnny Winter song. Oh, it was so cool too. And John Corabi was supposed to finish it, put his vocals on it, and he never did.
So that, come on, Corabi, what are you doing, man? Release it.
it was just so cool to see that, you know, like when I've seen you in Kicks, you know, I always got the sense of like you're majorly influenced by Keith Richards, and then I see you playing Saturday Night Special. It's like, you know, that's totally makes sense now. You talk about your original love for Southern rock, so it's just how much more of a diverse player you are. You're already great, but to see that too is awesome.
Yeah it was, well, when I was first starting out and learning, and I hadn't really gotten into Keith Richards. I mean, I like the Stones. You know, I'd listened to them, but my real love was the Southern rock bands like the Allman Brothers and Lynyrd Skynyrd.
Right, perfect for our podcast.
Yeah.
When I messaged Charlie on his Instagram yesterday afternoon. I had said that there was a picture of you like at their merch after a gig or something, I think, at a Blackberry Smoke gig.
Oh yeah.
That's right. I'd seen you there. So yeah, those guys are great, as you know.
Yeah, there was I think it was 2017, a friend of mine, this guy named Charlie Overby, was he's like a singer-songwriter guy, and he got me to do a bunch of, well, I think there were, how many did we do? About five shows, a West Coast tour with Blackberry Smoke.
Oh, okay.
Got to open for them.
Oh, cool. Right on.
It was cool. Wow. I got to play the Fillmore in San Francisco.
Right on. Yeah. What was the name of that band?
That was Charlie Overby and the Broken Arrows. He's still playing. He's working on a new record right now.
Okay,
I have to check them out, man. I know. Mm-hmm. I know Charlie's got a love for the 80s and 70s hard rock stuff for sure.
Yeah. And somehow, I don't know how we got on that tour, but I guess Charlie Overby knew Charlie from Blackberry Smoke. And then Charlie Overby also, he's the guy that owns what's Blackhawk? Is it Blackhawk? God, I'm having trouble with names today. The hat, he makes hats.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
He's done
it. Is it Bonehawk or Black? Like, something like that, right? Something Hawk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Lonehawk?
I don't think so. That's my girlfriend.
Good. I'm glad for the assist. Hell yeah, we'll take it.
But Lone. Lonehawk.
Lonehawk. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. With the feather and stuff. And Charlie, Charlie Starr has a couple of his hats as well.
Very cool.
Brian, I think we follow them on Instagram on the page, on our Instagram page. Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Okay. Well, Jason's
guitar. Drop the luck sometime.
Jason's a guitar player. I'm assuming you want to do some guitar talk here with Brian.
Amps. I'd love to, Brian.
A rig, rig discussion chat.
Oh, that's yeah. That's an endless subject.
It is, but so I'll start out pretty easy. Like, have you gotten any gear recently? Guitar, amp, pedals, anything that you're like super, super, you know, over right now? Like you love.
Well, I got a couple of guitars recently. Well, in the last year, I got because I play a 71 Telecaster. I found another one, and it's weird. I found it on Reverb, and just bought it off of Reverb, and it turned out to be a beautiful guitar. It's another 71, and it's kind of like what I wanted my other one to be. So it's a nice version of the one I play. And then I went to a place called Rumble Seat Music, because a friend of mine used to work there. And he hooked me up with a 66 Tele. I've got the blonde one, or no, they're cream colored. And then this one's blonde. So it's a little bit wider. But it's a rosewood fretboard instead. That's my only rosewood telly.
Instead of maple, so you're normally a maple guy on the tellies.
Yeah, and then also while I was there, they just happened to have this. It's a 72. It's a Black Beauty, but it's a 72 reissue of a 54. So it's, yeah. I think that's what it was, but it's got the soap bar, black soap bar, and then the Alnico pickup in the front, and it's mint condition.
Wow. So one, why did you choose the 71 model Telecaster? Because it sounds like now you have two of them.
Well, I bought the first one way back in like 1980 or something from a friend, and I only paid like $275 for it. So that's why I ended up with that one. And I for years, I just sort of plunked around on it at home, but I never used it live until I went to California with the Rhythm Slaves. But I bought that second one just because it caught my eye, and the guy advertised it as being, what do you say, super lightweight or something, and the price was right.
Yeah,
because they're still affordable. Like mm-hmm. when you're in the '60s, I mean, even a 68 is like twice as much, or sometimes more than that.
So you got that from a private seller versus like one of the stores that was just selling stuff, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Why do you choose maple necks versus rosewood?
I don't know. There's something about it. I mean, on strats, I use rosewood, but a telly, I don't know. I like the
it's
way
brighter. Like you get a lot more brightness to it.
You think though? I don't know. I can't tell because it seems like that 66 I bought with rosewood, it's the most telly, like the brightest telly that I have.
Really?
Yeah.
Is it the pickup difference or something you think in that? Like are those the original pickups in that 68?
Or the 66?
Oh, sorry, the 66. Sorry, yes.
Yeah, in fact, that's the only problem with that guitar. Yeah, yeah, it's really microphonic too. So I don't know. If I was going to play it live, I'd have to do something.
just picks up too much stuff with it.
Yeah, it's got all. I mean, it's you know, on one hand, there's all these cool harmonics that come with it being whatever. I can't.
Sounds like super. Like it's super hot or something. It just picks up everything.
No, it's not hot. It's almost like it's a feedback. It's just like a microphone feedback. Well, I guess that's why they call it microphonic. it just makes no sense. It's not like a controlled feedback.
What's one piece of gear that you want to have that you haven't gotten yet?
Oh, good question.
I'll tell you this. Money's no object. What would you get?
Well, I'd get a mid-50s twin. And they made a twin that was low wattage in the mid-50s. And then around 58, they went to a higher wattage. And a friend of mine had one, and had a twin and a telly, and that was a magic combination. But
going all in on Fender guitar, Fender amp.
Yeah, but I'm, you know, I don't, I've got things besides Fenders that sound great. But my first amp that I started out with, the one that I took to Alabama and everything else, it's a 66 basement head. And that no other bassman that I ever played sounded like this. And I still have it. I played it on all the Rhino Bucket records that I've played on, except for the last one that I finally found an amp that beat it. It was a 78 Marshall JMP 50 watt. But
nice.
I always fall in love with different amps. And last time we went, Rhino Bucket went to Europe, we decided to scale down. We didn't feel like carrying around Marshalls because we have to carry them. And
right.
So we decided to go with combo amps. And I used the agency that we do it over there. It's all inclusive. They provide the back line, the van and all that stuff. And he has a list of amps that he has in his garage, and one of them I picked an AC30 this time.
The box, yeah.
And yeah, because I never played through one like that.
Mm-hmm.
But some of my, like Kenny Vaughn plays through a box, a little, but Kid Ramos, who is another guy. I love the way he plays. He uses a Vox. So anyway, I tried the Vox on this tour, and it was killer. And I liked it so much. When I got back home, I bought two. I got two Foxes, so I got two of those, two AC-30s sitting downstairs.
Is that going to be your go-to for recording or playing out or just for fun?
I don't know. I've got a choice now.
Have you tried, like, I know Fender is now doing like the combo or the emulator, solid state version of like those twins and stuff too. And they're supposed to sound almost exactly like the original, like tube amps.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I have played through solid state amps before that I got a good sound out of. Like I had an old PV, Studio 50, which was solid state. In fact, it was Steve's old harp amp that Steve used to use. He'd put it behind the curtain live and use a bullet mic through that amp. So when we broke up the first time, I took it.
Have you tried out, so I know Fender's now put out one of these, but they're basically any kind of amplifier sounds and stuff you want them. I know Helix is very popular too with a lot of people. Have you tried any of those units?
The ones that,
they've got like every single amp available to you and every single
modeling amp.
Oh, yeah, model. It's not even a modeling amp. It's just a control box. Like Helix, now Fender has one. Chris Tapp from the Cold Stairs was just posted that he's now like a believer in this Fender thing because it has every sound you could possibly imagine on it.
No, I've tried a few things here and there, like along the way to record. Yeah. And there's something, even though it sounds like something, I mean, you're hearing the sound, but there's something missing, and maybe it's psychological, and it
doesn't feel like, you don't get the feel quite like you would from a tube amp, right? A solid state or anything else electronic's not really going to give you that same, I guess, connection to the amp that a tube amp does.
Yeah, when the sound's generated digitally or however they do it. Yeah, there's something like the soul is missing, and the inspiration is missing for me.
Yeah, I know, like Tracy Guns, Brian Jones, not Brian Forsyth. Too many Brians. He's a big Helix guy, I think. And then he was messing around with the Fender, and then Tapp said the Fender thing's pretty good. I've never really messed around with those, but you know, if you're touring a lot and lugging gear or whatever you have to do, you have all those sounds in one place, and like you can run it through direct or do something, and then throw your, like, it just seems like, I mean, shit, that's probably, it'll save your back, I guess. Yeah. But
a lot of people have suggested that to me, but I don't know. I'm old school.
You're a purist. You're a purist. Yeah. There's nothing wrong with being a purist.
Yeah.
All right. You got to choose one amp and one guitar to play a show. That's all you get, an amp and a guitar. What do you choose, and what's your combo?
Well, it depends on the show.
All right. Well, run us through. Let's say you're doing a Rhino Bucket gig. What are you choosing?
50-watt, 78. JMP through a Marshall 412 with vintage 30s in it. And nice. My Telecaster.
And your Telecaster. Okay. All right. It feels like you're ready for this question.
And one cord. No, that's
because. Yeah, you do. You got to have a cord. You got to have a cord too. All right. You're doing a kick skib gig. What are you going to choose?
The same thing, except the wireless unit in between.
Okay, but no, really, no matter what you're going to play, like, you've got a standard guitar, standard amp rig you're going with.
For rock. Well, and then again, Rhino Bucket, I used to have Vox in Europe, but I don't know. You know, I have different setups. Like when I was playing in the blues band that I played with, I used the basement and just a 112 cabinet. I have a Fender reverb unit that I hook up to it. And then that's probably the same setup I had in the Snake Handlers, that country band.
Yeah. That would definitely play blues or country rock for sure. That's a good setup.
Yeah.
Why did you never really go towards like the humbuckers or maybe the Les Pauls and really do the Fenders, the Strats, and the Tellys, and kind of the single coils?
I started out with a Les Paul, but my first Les Paul. Well, no, my first guitar, real guitar, was a Melody Maker, which, you know, famous Melody Maker. Mm-hmm. And that had single coils on it. But I didn't know anything about anything at that point. And in fact, I didn't respect it being vintage, and I sanded it down and
ow.
and so I took those pickups off of it and put humbuckers on the Melody Maker.
Was that running P90s, like the Soapbox P90s in it?
No, they're these little cheap single coils. They only have they don't have the poles. I mean, they're just black pickups. But yeah, so I put humbuckers on that, and then my second guitar that I got when I was in high school was a Gold Top, 71 Gold Top, and it was a reissue of a 54. And it had soap bars, and there's something about a soap bar, and it's a single coil for one thing, but it's, yep, it's sort of in between because it's got this growl and this softness to it.
Yeah. My TBL special has P90s in it. I love it.
Right. Yeah. That's, I have one of those too, but,
you have good taste.
But through what happened was that Gold Top, and this is one of my regrets. I was rehearsing one day and I leaned it up against the wall to do something, and I went to move the amp and I pulled the cord and I heard this. I heard it hit the floor, but it was a dull bang, and I went and picked it up and the headstock was broken. And my drummer at the time, this was pre even going to Alabama, my drummer, he was just as bummed as I was, and he said he offered to lend me the money to get a new guitar, because I thought once you break the headstock, it's like a horse that broke its leg, you got to shoot it.
Yeah, you shoot it.
So I took that guitar with me down to DC to the music store and gave it to the repair guy. I was going to get it repaired enough to sell it. And I went in and I picked out another guitar. So my second guitar was a Les Paul Standard with humbuckers. And I played that all through the 70s. In fact, I played it in early Kicks days. But the bummer was when I went back to get that Gold Top, the guy had fixed it. You couldn't even tell it had been broken.
Yeah.
But I owed my drummer the money for that other Les Paul, so I had to sell it.
They say, too, if the repair is done right on those headstocks, it's actually stronger and more stable than it was. Yeah, yeah. I've heard a lot about that. I'm waiting. I've got my special and I've got a standard. I'm just like, I'm so paranoid about that falling over and like breaking a headstock off. I really am.
Well, my Melody Maker has been broken three times and it sounds better than ever, but,
maybe that's what I need to do, because I sound kind of crummy. Maybe I just need to break one of his picks.
To break his guitar on purpose. It didn't work.
Well, that Les Paul, you know, it's funny because the 70s, they had that little volute thing at the end of the, mm-hmm, that was supposed to make it stronger.
Right.
That standard, I ended up breaking it five different times, like throughout the years. And it finally got to the point where I'd change the strings, put a brand new set of strings, and they sounded like rubber bands. It was so dead. So I eventually had to get the neck replaced on that thing.
Yeah. God. I know too, it's that funky angle of the headstock of the Gibson plus the width or the thickness there. It's always like the danger. And it's also what some of the tuning instability comes a little bit from that, particularly around the G.
Yeah.
But I figured out, like, I get my Les Pauls to stay in tune actually about as well as my Fenders now. I lube, like, the nut. I also lube the saddles a little bit. And then how I tied the string on the post. Like, I haven't really had any problem with these, but I'm just always freaked out about the headstock breaking if it falls over, gets, you know, dropped wrong in the case or something.
Can I ask you what year your special is?
Yeah, it's a 2019. It's newish. It's like when they reintroduce those, it is not vintage at all. So I got it from Sweetwater. I bought one of their demos.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, but it is, none of this stuff is vintage. My special Telecaster American Special, I think that's like a 15 or 14. It's a Roadhouse Strat. That's like mid 2000s. And then that's 2021, Paul, and that's a 2019 special. I've had a lot of shitty guitars where I've traded up or sold over time and accumulate better gear.
Yeah, I used to do that. I think I've zeroed it down to my core guitars.
I tell you what I'm looking for right now, though. I really, really, really want a junior, just a junior single pickup junior. Black. I think I'm looking at that. And I'd love to get more of a, you know, worn in vintage one of those.
I got a 59 TV.
Oh, do you really? What color is it?
TV.
Tobacco?
TV yellow.
Oh, TV yellow. Oh, Gibson's TV yellow is so good. That color is so good. I love it.
I actually have a guitar question for Brian. On the pandemic jam thing, the Saturday Night Special, I don't think I'd ever seen you play a Les Paul before, always a Telly, so that was cool. That just call for that song?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember what I played on that. Oh, I played my Sunburst, the 75. I just did that because that's what Gary Roslington played.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You got to play a Les Paul for Skinner, man. Come on.
Yeah. I don't know if I actually recorded on that, though. I used it for the video.
Okay. I might. Well, it looks the part, right?
Yeah, I think I've recorded on my Melody Maker.
I'm envious of you having a 59 Junior TV yellow. I nearly am.
My special's 58.
Is it really? So you've got, see, I got, you know, I got reissued shit. Send me pictures or something. Where can I find pictures of these guitars?
They're probably on my Facebook. I got the gear album in my photos.
I'm going to scroll down. If I don't see you, I'm going to message you. It's like, Brian, send me pictures of these two guitars, please, so I can sit there and like salivate over them.
What about pedals?
I stay away from pedals mostly, but for kicks, I did have to have a chorus pedal for the Itch and Yeah. And I put together like where my receiver for my wireless, I put that like right in front of my amp, and right next to it was a true bypass. And then I had two pedals hooked to the bypass pedal because I hate being in line with things. And I had the chorus, and I had a tube screamer. But I since changed it to something else. But that's what I used for Cold Shower for my Strat. And those are the only two pedals I'd use. And it was only, you know, the chorus on two songs and the other thing, the distortion on one song. And Rhino Bucket, all I have is a tuner. But I do have pedals. I have some here at home that I mess around with. I have five different wah-wah pedals that I've collected over the years. I got an old Vox and a reissue Vox. I got a it just came out not too long ago. It's a Crybaby, but it's some guy's signature Crybaby. Anyway, I got a whole drawer full of pedals. Like I got a tremolo pedal. And then I got some old pedals. I got some of those overdrives. I can't remember it. Anyway, I got a bunch of them.
Brian, he's a purist, man. You're like, and I'm kind of with you. It's like you get a good guitar, you get a good amp. You can do a whole lot with that too, especially if you don't need any crazy sounds like that's in Brian Jones, again, all the Brian's, Tina and Tracy at you know, that's what they do. They're just a good guitar and a good amp when they play a chain link hooker, and that's about right.
Yeah, and you know, some of those amps, like you're talking about the little thing that's got a bunch of amp sounds in it. You know, I tend, like, if I were to get one of those, I'd find the one amp that I like, and that would be it.
You would just use it, and it's like $1,200. For $1,200, you might as well just have the amp. You don't need the whole, like, control thing.
Yeah.
Because the Fender one is, like, $1,200 or $1,400, a new one that just came out. I'm like, holy wow. Shit. Like, I would just, like, have a really, really good amp.
Yeah.
But I guess if you need the diversity, if you're recording studio, I don't know, you know, but it just seems very excessive to me. But you know, I don't do this for a living either. I don't do a podcast for a living. It's how Brian and I have fun, kill time.
Yeah. Labor of love and joy.
You may think so with the professional level questions, you know, that we give you in the conversations. You know, where I want to go, Brian, we'll get off gear talk real fast. I want to go back to something that you said at the beginning when we started talking to you, is this duck egg things, like, are they to eat, that you have your duck egg lady, or like you eat them?
Yeah, I love them.
How did you get into eating duck eggs, and how do they differ from chicken eggs?
Well, actually I started before I moved here. I found a lady out in, I don't know who introduced
me. I mean, they're bigger than a chicken egg, obviously, because a duck's a bigger bird.
Yeah, a little bit. I found a woman in my neighborhood out in L.A. that had ducks, and I used to meet her. It was like a drug deal. I'd wait outside of the gate with my $5, and she'd come down and open the door, and I'd give her that, and she'd give me a thing of duck eggs. But so then I moved here, and I found a little farm not too far from here, and they had I forget what I've started. Oh no, I guess the whole purpose of finding that farm was because they had duck eggs, but they also have other things.
I would think it's a lot easier to score duck eggs in Tennessee than it is in, or Nashville, than it is LA.
It is. Like, I was lucky with that lady. I just put it out there one day on Facebook. I said, does anyone know anyone around here that's got duck eggs? And this woman responded to me, and it turned out she was about four blocks away. So that worked out. But they also, you can find them occasionally. You can find them at Whole Foods, but they want top dollar for them.
Yeah, when Whole Foods wants top dollar for everything, that place is crazy expensive.
Yeah.
That's why I don't go. But how did you, I mean, like, why duck eggs? Like, what got you into eating duck eggs?
I can't remember. I guess.
Is that like a Maryland thing or?
No, I don't know. I must have had one along the way and just fell in love with it.
Interesting.
In fact, I got.
He's got them in the fridge. He's going to show us.
I'm supposed to meet my duck lady tomorrow.
You got the deal going down.
See, these aren't real big. They almost
They're just a little bit bigger, but yeah, not substantially, no.
But these, I guess the duck season's winding down. They go dormant for a little while.
But yeah. But sometimes they get a little bigger. And in fact, this farm that I was getting them from before I found my duck lady. every once in a while, they have a self-serve refrigerator where you pick up your orders, and they'll have leftover things, like if they'll have leftover chicken eggs or something. You can just grab something extra. And a couple times they had goose eggs too, so I tried them. They're even bigger.
Are they good?
Yeah, they're just a bigger version.
So with a goose egg, you can make a one egg omelet. It's so right size.
Yeah. Well, someone sent me an emu egg, but that was a little too big. I'd use a hammer and a chisel to get it open.
Brian's the guy who's like, just send a mini bird egg. He'll take it. He'll like it. Just give him whatever you got. Ostrich, emu, whatever. Just send him the egg.
That's awesome.
that is fun. With a duck egg though, is it like any discernible taste between a chicken egg, or is it just similar?
Very similar, but they're a little bit richer and like the yolk is creamier and thicker. So like if you do a sunny side up egg with a regular egg, if you break it, it pretty much just goes bleh. But with you break it and it just oozes.
So we like to call those a dippy egg because you take your toast and you can dip them into and like, yeah. So those make good dippy eggs.
Yeah.
In fact, I'm going to have to try duck eggs.
Like I like to put eggs on top of like burger and duck eggs are good because you can slice it, like slice a piece off and it'll just
leak all over.
Yeah, it just kind of.
Yeah, because you're right about that too. Is like it just makes a big mess when you get a regular egg on there, right? Because it's always like, you know, a over easy ish thing. It just gets all over the bun and all over the sandwich.
Yeah.
I'm in, Brian. I'm in. I'm both Brian's. I'm in. I'm trying. I'm going to try duck eggs. I live in the ruralish area of Columbus. Yeah, you're North Dakota. I mean, come on. They got to have duck eggs where you are.
My wife works at a place called Natural Grocers. Maybe not to see
which. See if she has duck eggs. Are they? I know not? Ohio. What's that? We got ducks in Ohio.
That's all you have to do is just ask around. Like somebody's got to know somebody.
Oh yeah, I'm sure.
I'll do like you. I'll post on Facebook. I'm like, hey, I'm looking for duck eggs, and there's probably a lot of duck egg people in Marysville, Ohio. So
yeah.
All right, Brian. I'm Doug. I'm done with duck talk and guitar gear talk. I'll shut up.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I think we're maybe going to wind down here. So now is Rhino Bucket your main thing, and then what's going on? You mentioned earlier maybe cutting a record, and what's the tour look like? Tour schedule or?
Yeah, right. Well, Rhino Bucket is right now the only thing. I mean, we don't have any gigs until probably early next year. I think we're doing a whiskey in April and one other one around there. But and then the record whenever that happens. But before when Kix was up and running, you know, and we Rhino Bucket would decide they want to do a record, it was like, well, I got this little space here and this time here, you know, I try to squeeze it in and now it's, you know, it's wide open. But, you know, I've got my ears open. Last week I went down to the East Side Bowl and I saw these friends of mine playing there in the lounge. And the guy, what's his name? Billy Mercer from Tom Kiefer's band.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
And this other friend of mine, Tobin Dale, who used to work at Rumble Seat Music. And it's just so much fun watching them play. And we were talking about putting something together, but then again, I'm still trying to get over this stroke. So I don't want to embarrass myself.
Well, listen, if you ever want to play in an Americana/rockabilly band in Ohio, you can come and play with us anytime you want, man.
Sounds like fun.
You won't embarrass yourself. You'll embarrass us because you're going to be so much better than we are. You know, who doesn't like Americana/rockabilly/alt-country?
Yeah.
Is that something where when you go to these bars, whatever, open jams, you ever get up just to kind of to keep the chops going? Or
before pre-stroke I used to these guys down here, they had this band called the Rock and Roll Residency. They're Ace Frehley's backup band. And they used to have jams but I met them on the boat on the Monsters to Rock cruise, but they're from Nashville and they do these jams and people get up there and I got up there. I've jammed with them on the boat twice. And then, you mentioned rocking pod. I did the first one that they did down here.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And those guys did, was it the night before? I think they did a pre-party thing,
and yeah, I got that's what we were at the East Side Bowl or whatever the bowl was for that pre-party the night before with like Rare Hair and all that stuff going on.
Well, these guys did it at the same place at the convention center, But yeah, they did one. They did one last week at the East Side Bowl. But yeah, I'd get up and do stuff then, but now I don't know. I'd probably be hesitant. I did one of the rare hair things.
Very cool. We were podcasts when they first had the first Rockin' Pods going on. Our first year was
21.
21?
Yeah.
21. 21, they didn't have it. 22, they had it. 23. So that's really been our extent so far.
Yeah, this was probably, maybe it was 2019 when I did it.
Yeah. Right before the shit hit the fan.
Yeah.
All right, man. Where do we go to send our listeners everything we want to know about Rhino Bucket or what you got going on? Any social medias you want to plug?
Yeah. Well, of course, I don't know the address. But there, in Rhino Bucket, there's a Rhino Bucket page on Facebook, and there's a Rhino Bucket Instagram they can follow. There's a Rhino Bucket merch page somewhere. yeah, there's actually still a Kix merch page too. They've been selling all the merch that's left over. And me personally, I have a website, but
I've seen it yet.
Yeah, it's just sitting there. I haven't done anything in years. So I mostly do Facebook and Instagram.
So and Facebook or Instagram probably sounds like the best just for anything that you're into.
Yeah, Instagram's usually food pictures.
Better be some duck eggs on that. I'm gonna follow you right now on Instagram. So I'm definitely getting in on that, and I'm gonna be going on your Facebook page looking for the pictures of those guitars too.
Yeah, in fact, I probably don't have the new ones on there yet, but in my photos somewhere, I've got pictures of new guitars.
You've got some homework, man. We got to get those pictures up there.
I think I have 5 tellies. I have a picture of all 5 tellies sitting opposite.
Pat Mazingo and Andrew Daly and one of our other friends, Sandrew, follows you on Instagram. I can see that.
All right, Brian, thanks so much for coming on, man. We've wanted to get you on here for a long time, and all love and respect to everything you do, man. You're a hell of a guitar player and a great guy, and welcome back anytime. So thanks for coming on and chatting with us.
Yeah, yeah. Congratulations on all those years of sobriety, too. That's fantastic.
Yeah, that's pretty much got me through everything. Yeah, but anyway, I love talking music and gear and anything, you know.
He's saying he's going to come back on, Brian. He's telling us he will come back on to talk to us again.
And we'll look forward to that, definitely.
I'll talk about food, too.
Be ready. We're going to want your best egg dishes from the best animals. So come back with that list next time. Well, here you go. Here's our recipes.
Thank you so much to Brian Forsyth for joining us on the podcast. I was... For a while, I've known that he spent some time down in Alabama, and this is pre-Kix, pre-shoes. So it's cool to hear about that, and he got to, you know, see those guys, some of the guys that were in the Swampers, you know, around. This is in, like, the later 70s, so that's very cool. And I also like talking about the thing that I came across, you know, him playing on the, I don't know if this is like these pandemic jams. He kind of explained a little bit how those work, but he did Skinner's Saturday Night Special with John Corabi and Ted Nugent's bass player and a couple other guys that are fairly well known. So that's very cool. So check that out if you get a chance, check that out. It's very cool.
I like that we got to talk to him. Really, all the stuff outside of Kix, because everybody knows Kix and all that, and the things he did leading up to it, after, or even during, I think were interesting, because I, again, kind of like at the top of the show, is wasn't a big Kix fan until later on in life, mostly to do the dude playing that They'll Close Your Eyes single so many times, but it was cool to hear his story and everything he's done, and also learn about Duck Eggs, Brian. Duck Eggs is something new to me.
Thanks for reminding me. my wife works at a place called Natural Grocers, and asked her, I was like, do they have duck eggs there? I think
do they? Remember.
She's you know, I think I should know that answer, right? They might. I'll find
but if you follow him on Instagram,
yeah,
most of his postings are food, and he always has a duck egg with whatever he's eating.
Yeah. Yeah, he's like his whole Facebook and his social media is all like, you know, recipes.
Yeah, yeah. And it's interesting to see, again, he incorporates a lot of duck eggs into his diet. And I think one other thing, Brian, and we talked about it with him right at the beginning, which was scary, is the fact he almost died and even had a mini stroke due to carbon monoxide poisoning. Yeah, you know, how scary is that?
Yeah, definitely glad he's okay. But yeah, you know, I really should, I would, you know, I'd like to put it together, a rock and roll health team, Brian Forsyth, Steve Jewell, what he did. So
yeah. Yeah. Brian looks great though. Like physically fit and everything, yep. Man, he's in really good shape and certainly coming along from recovering from that stroke, but that was scary. He could have very easily died. A lot of people die due to that.
Yeah. That was totally weird that happened like that. Wow. I'm glad he's okay. So
me too.
And of course he lives in that groovy Nashville neighborhood, which we hear so much about.
Oh yeah, yeah, with the Tony Higbees and who else is over that direction?
Ace Von Johnson.
Ace Von Johnson. I think Damon Johnson is somewhere around there. I'll like free like that. That's so. If I next time I go to Nashville, that's all. I just want to walk around those neighborhoods to see who I run into.
Yeah, for sure. Start knocking on doors. Oh, sorry, knocking on. Sorry.
See who's out jogging. See who's out walking a dog. Just whatever's going on out there.
Well, until we're knocking on doors in a groovy Nashville neighborhood, always remember, Southern Rock is reverent, blues is blood. We'll see you next time.
I'm here on my own. I'll do anything but go home. Come clean, I'll be clear. I'll go anywhere, but I ain't going there. You're probably waiting by the door. I don't wanna do this anymore. It's only you, it's only me. There's nothing left for us to be. All the baggage that we carry around all day.
And everything that we wanted to say.
It got too heavy and it weighed us down all the way.
And the price got too much to pay. Feel alone. Another night, another day. Nothing changes even if I stay. An icy stare, a silent sigh. Not a word, no way.
Now it's true. There ain't much left of me and you. We're on a last call. It's It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.